Since 1981, Justin has been producing world-class Bordeaux-style wines from Paso Robles on the California Central Coast. As a pioneer of the region, Justin Wines helped put Paso Robles on the winemaking map. The Justin team believes the wine should be exceptional in every aspect, which is why they use boutique winemaking practices like hand harvesting and hand sorting. With a rich history of accolades, Justin is proud to produce exceptional wines and hold the title of America's number one luxury Cabernet. Whether you're a first-time wine drinker or a seasoned aficionado, Justin has the perfect wine for every occasion. Visit justinwine.com and enter promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off your order. Justin Wines also makes the perfect holiday gifts for clients, colleagues, friends, or family. Don't miss out. Visit justinwine.com and use the promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off for a limited time.
Michael Chandler, three-time MMA Bellator champion. Incredible, man. That living the dream. It was awesome.
Thank you. It was a good one. It was a redemption story. You know, I had lost the belt a couple of years ago to this guy. So to be able to build myself back up and get the belt back was awesome. So.
Yeah, I lived my life trying to brand myself as that redemption economically story. But you and I have similar stories as far as redemption that we're always the underdog. Mm-hmm. And I started doing a little bit of work with Rudy Rudiger. Have you ever seen the movie Rudy?
Oh my gosh, who hasn't? Yes, like, I love that. Yeah,
you
love
it? Job. Well, it was interesting because he told me a story about how even Kobe Bryant loved Rudy. And I'm like, you know, I understand how Mike Chandler loves Rudy, yeah. Dave Meltzer loves Rudy, but why would Kobe love Rudy? And what he said was that every time Kobe complained as a kid, you know, because they were traveling in Italy and all this stuff, that his dad would hand him the DVD, yeah, and say, don't waste the talent that God gave you. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole nother nuance, not just the underdogs,
yeah,
but guys that were born with all the talent, a lot of times they waste it. And I think in your sport, a lot of times, a lot of guys waste what could be in life an opportunity. Where was it, you know, in your life that you realized, you know what, I may not be born with all the gifts of everyone else. I think you were the last guy picked on your wrestling team.
Yeah.
But you knew somewhere in your soul that you were good enough.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, I grew up as a son of a carpenter, son of a secretary. My mom was a secretary. So early on, right away, number one, I knew the value of earning a dollar. Number two, I earned the value of pulling myself up by my bootstraps since day one. You know, so I had that going for me. You know, I mean, a lot of people say, man, I wish I was born with all the money and all the this and all the that. I was happy that I was born with just that work ethic, just that mentality.
Do you ever feel sorry for the people that were born with everything?
I do a little bit, you know, and I do. And that's, you know, and all of us have a different story. And a lot of people can use being born with that to their platform and to be able to speak to people. But for me, it's growing up as the little guy from a little town who wasn't necessarily taught to do huge things. You know, a lot of people who come from where I'm from, didn't go off and do these large things, but I've always had this tugging and yearning on my heart, knowing that God has me in the palm of his hand throughout the whole thing. And I was, like you said, I had to walk on to the University of Missouri wrestling team because I wasn't getting division. I wasn't getting any Division I offers. You know, I was turning down scholarships to smaller schools, and you know, everybody said, why are you going to go take this big step? Why are you going to go walk onto this Division I wrestling team? What if you never start? What if you quit? What if you just ride the bench? But for some reason, I was willing to take that chance, and it turned me into a couple-time team captain. I was a four-time NCAA qualifier, All-American, and it turned me into the man I am, the competitor I am today. Now, three-time MMA world champion because of the fact that I took a chance on myself. So
you're the only, I think, three-time MMA world champion. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So which is awesome, but that also means you have to lose the belt a couple of times to actually become, you know, three time. But but like you said, you know, I think America loves winners, but America and the world loves a redemption story, like you said. So if I got to go through a little bit of pain, a little bit of anguish to get to the platform that I have now, so be it.
Why is it, do you think, that some people can, you know, win throughout their career and yet, you know, you obviously prepare the right way. You mm-hmm. work harder than anyone because you don't have what the gifts that everyone else has, mm-hmm. but you have a heart, which is a bigger gift. Why is it you think that you actually lost those fights?
You know, I think any time that I have fallen short in my life, it's because I didn't give myself permission to win. And like I said, I was a small guy from a small town, so it wasn't ingrained in me. Nobody ever quite told me, Michael, you should go out there and win the world. If you want to do anything in the entire world, you can go do that and you can grasp that. To me, I was kind of brought up in that mentality of, okay, you work hard and maybe good things will happen, but just continue to work hard. We're not quite sure what's going to happen. It's not a defeated mentality, or it's not anything like that. It's more of just, there's not a ton out there that is guaranteed, and there's a lot of safety in working hard and keeping your nose to the grindstone. So I've always been fighting this little guy inside me, this little bitty guy from a little bitty town. I was the kid who was too small to play football, basketball, whatever. I had to wrestle. I didn't have hair under my armpits till I was 20 years old, you know? So I was a late bloomer. I was a small guy. So that guy's still in there. So I'm constantly beating him over the head every single day to try to continue to remind myself that God put me on this earth for great things. And anytime that I have fallen short, I had done all the preparation. I had worked the hardest in the room. Any coach that I've ever trained under, you could interview them and they would say, Michael Chandler was the hardest worker in the room. And I know that without a doubt. But when it got to the competition, when I somehow found a way to almost win, there was 30 seconds left on the clock and I'm up by a takedown against the number three guy in the country, I would somehow find a way to lose. And it's that self-sabotage, that self-sabotage mentality, and that cognitive dissonance of my values and what I truly believe not lining up with reality, which was about to happen. Therefore, I made sure I dummied myself down back to that average small guy from a small town. And I'm constantly fighting it every single day.
Yeah, I learned a really valuable lesson when I was on Ed Milette's show, mm-hmm. because Ed talked about this internal thermometer.
The governor, on the thermometer. And when I heard that, I said, holy cow, you know?
And it's me, and I did it in sports as well. And I look back and, you know, when you said you took those chances, I always say nobody regrets taking the chances. But everyone, when you get to be 51 like me, they'll tell you, I regret this, you know, like not trying, mm-hmm. you know, and the what ifs and could ifs and should ifs. I don't regret that I took all that time to play college football and did everything I could, even though I had a lot of the Littleman syndrome. And it carries over, though, into business because we both grew up poor. Mm-hmm. And I had that same problem with my wealth.
Yeah.
That I was, you know, it was almost like guilty. And then there was this void, this unconscious competency that we're talking about that, man, I'm a fraud.
Yeah.
Like all this money, I'm so successful. And now this time around, I still have a little bit in me, but I'm in such receivership of that, you know, I am all this.
Yeah.
I am, and I'm doing it through me for other people, which really gives me that fight. Now, business-wise, what was the first... Because you said, you know, you wanted to earn everything. Yeah. What was your first business?
My first business, I guess, would be wrestling camps. You know, I would do, you know, luckily I had a gift of wrestling, and I had a bunch of, you know, I could go back to my high school and we could rent out the gymnasium, and we could bring, you know, 60 kids in, and they pay X amount of dollars and you'd make a little bit of money, you know. And that was the first time I, you know, really, really made money. So that was in college.
You kind of do the same thing now. You have your own gym.
Yeah. So now I have a gym, and so fitness and health and wellness and working out, it's always been my gift. And I've just had so many people in my life. And as we sit here, you can think of 10 people, 20 people in your life that said, if it wasn't for he or she, right. I would not be here. You know, and for me,
those catalysts.
Yeah, for me, they've always been coaches or they've been mentors, but for the most part, coaches. So I've always said, if I could be a coach, if I could be the guy that people look up to when I'm in the cage or when I'm in the gym or whenever I'm in the wrestling room or even just on social media, wherever I am, if I can be that coach, I can monetize it. It's awesome.
One of the things that I wanted to talk about is, as you get to the later years of your career, you don't have to fight anymore. You're a seasoned entrepreneur, business person, philanthropist. And, you know, it's one thing to want to play tennis or golf until you're 80. But, you know, I was watching your last fight thinking, man, if I had the life with my gorgeous wife, kids, economic success, but also the brain and acumen to make so much money outside the cage. You know, what is it that brought you back and continues to bring you back into the cage when, you know, obviously it's not an easy living to get stand up with the toughest people in the world. And, you know, it has to hurt. I mean, I couldn't imagine there's easier ways to make money.
There is. Well, especially when I'm blessed to have awesome relationships and friendships like yourself. And it's, you know, I just think I've been given so many great gifts, and God has had me in the palm of his hand since the very, very beginning. And I've watched it all be orchestrated. And I keep coming back time and time again, because I think truly I still have the passion. I still have the purpose. I still have my why connected to it. You know, as you said, I have my wife and my two boys, and this sport has afforded me some amazing gifts and blessings and opportunities and a huge platform. So I just love the opportunity. You know, I love to compete. You know, it's actually funny. I don't really love fighting that much. You know, people see the way that I compete and they see the ferocity in which I compete, and they think I must just love it. And I actually, you know, don't really love the fighting that much, but it's the shiny object that brings people and draws people to me and my story and the story of the walk-on and the story of just a guy who was a small guy from a small town who was taught to do small things. And somehow, some way, here I am. And every single chapter, every single fight is another brush stroke on this masterpiece I'm painting for my sons to be able to see someday. And ultimately too, as athletes, you know, David, you guys have been around a lot of athletes, obviously Rick, with tennis players, you know, when they start to decline at a certain age, or whether it be mindset or whatever it be, I feel like I'm still continuing to scratch the surface every single time I fight, and every single day is just a blessing, and continuing to do it until the wheels fall off, and making sure I stay healthy. Cause obviously this is as we talked about with the nose, there's a lot of occupational hazards that come with mixed martial arts, but also a lot of opportunities and a lot of blessings. So we're going to keep on keeping on until it's time to take those gloves off for the last time and sail off into the sunset and just, make a living doing things that are a little bit, easier physically.
No, listen, at the end of the day, you know, how Michael's wired from those early days in Missouri, running around the woods in diapers, and your dad built your house with his bare hands, the work ethic, and how you're put together from, you know, the ground up, those core values are still with you. And you're such a good, amazing competitor. It's hard to let that go. You'll know when you got to do that, but you just love to compete. Anybody, anytime, anywhere, it's the competition. And that's what this is all about. And that's the underlying factor for any athlete, you know? Yeah. And that's what you're seeing, Dave, that he described so perfectly.
And Rick, if Mike calls you in 3 years and he says, Rick, man, I just love fighting, you know, not love fighting, but I want to keep giving back, but I'm not sure it's time. Every single one of your greatest tennis players in the world has come to that point at different ages and different pieces and parts of their career. What are some of the questions that you would ask Michael to help him determine when it's time to hang it up? Are there certain questions that you talked with Serena and Venus about, or, you know, what would you ask Michael before he made that decision?
Well, I think number one, you know, he has a family, he has to make a living, but if he has to feel that he honestly has a chance to win. If he's just going through the motions, he's not only cheating the sport, he's cheating himself. And we talked about Roddick like that. He didn't want to be 50 in the world. If Roddick couldn't be top 10, that's why he retired at 28, where he got VW and Serena still playing at 40, you know, because they could be relevant. So it's a different situation for everybody. But if he thinks he can still deliver the goods or the knockout punch, he should keep going. Because they're, listen, age is a number. There's no playbook for this. You know what I mean? People don't know what's inside. They see a number, but they don't know what's inside this guy. And they don't want to know what's inside this
guy. Yeah, they don't. Trust me, I want to know what's inside him when he's going to make some money with us together. And I've started that venture with him. And everything he touches off and outside the ring, he's successful at, because he takes the same diligence and the same mindset, heart set, and handset that it takes to be successful. Mike, what's one of the challenges? You know, I love doing this to build my own ego and toughness, you know, when being an entrepreneur is not easy. And so it does create fear in people, a different kind of fear. You know, what's one thing that's challenging when it comes to making money, building a business, deciding to invest in something? And you do all three, but do you have fear sometimes that's equal to or greater than that of being in the ring? And if so, why?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I think honestly, you know, being an athlete for me came pretty naturally to me. You know, there's not a lot of fear that I have going into a huge, you know, my last fight, Madison Square Garden, the world's most iconic arena, the brightest lights. You were there, you know, it was warming up in the same locker rooms as Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson and the greats of combat sports. But I don't have any fears going into it, 'cause I know I have no regrets, based on my preparation. I left no stone unturned in my preparation. I was diligent with my diet. I was diligent with my training. I was diligent with my sleep, diligent with my supplementation. So, those decisions to do the right thing were always easy for me when it came to athletics. You know, when you talk about business, or you're talking about rubbing elbows with some of the biggest and brightest minds in business in the world, you can start to have somewhat of an imposter syndrome. You know, you can have somewhat of the fear of, well, okay, you were good at this one thing, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to translate to the next thing. So I think just working a lot on myself, operating in gratitude for that which I do have, which wakes me up every single morning. And I hear you talk about it all the time. Say thank you in the morning and say thank you before you go to bed at night. And I've really been working on that, because as humans, we are prone to wander, and we are prone to get used to the blessings that we have. And they no longer seem like blessings anymore, because they seem like commonplace. And I think since this last fight, especially over the holidays, getting to spend a lot of time with my family and a little bit of downtime, that's when you can really do the most work on yourself to realize the blessings that you do have in your life, how thankful you are for the people, the places, the things that you get to be around, and ultimately why you are doing what you are doing. You know, so when it comes to the fears of investments, or the fears of, do I deserve to be in the room with this person? Do I deserve to be on a conversation like this, on a call like this? You know, it's always continuing to operate in gratitude and say, hey, it's not really up to me. These opportunities are going to come and go, and these opportunities are going to present themselves, and it's up to me to put my best foot forward. And hopefully, you know, your reputation speaks for itself, and you can continue to move forward and hope for the best. You know, and it's kind of like my fight style. You know, sometimes it's, you know, go out there and sometimes it's throw caution to the wind. Sometimes it's being very calculated and finding that beautiful, delicate dance between the two.
This show is brought to you by BetterHelp. Therapy is a great tool for facing your fears and finding ways to overcome them, because sometimes the scariest thing is not facing our fears in the first place and holding ourselves back. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. Overcome your fears with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/playbook today to get a 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/playbook. Imagine starting a small business, your first customer, your first hire, your first real paycheck. It's an exciting time, but also a little scary. That's where JustWorks comes in. As an all-in-one platform, JustWorks supports small business growth by providing seamless tools for benefits, payroll, HR, and compliance, all with transparent pricing. Running payroll is now painless. You can complete it in 90 seconds or less and automate payments. So it's as simple as set it and forget it. In 2023 alone, JustWorks processed over 25.6 billion in trusted payroll for its customers. And you won't have to worry about paperwork. They handle payroll, tax documents, and reporting to ensure compliance. Visit justworks.com/podcast to join thousands of small businesses that trust JustWorks to manage payroll, benefits, compliance, and more. That's justworks.com/podcast.
You've switched from the Bellator to UFC. What was the hardest part about transitioning from Bellator to the UFC?
You know, for me, balance has always been, you know, for all of us, it's that gray area, the ebb and flow of trying to create the life that you've always wanted, try to follow God's calling on your life, but then also trying to give your time, your energy, your presence to, for me, it's my wife and son. For me, it's my family and the people around me. But transitioning from Bellator to the UFC, I fought in Bellator for over a decade. I was one of the faces of Bellator. So I left the relative security of the organization that I was with to really chase a dream, chasing the dream to become the number one guy in the world. You can only do that in the UFC octagon. So I basically took a chance on myself. I took a bet on myself. So I think that I'm realizing a dream and the platform is growing and my voice is being heard by so many out there. And I just want to inspire and motivate as many people as I possibly can. So I think it's just trying to be here with open arms, asking for the discernment in every different aspect of my life, that I will just be led and be able to take on all the opportunities, but also ultimately give as much time as I possibly can to those who matter the most, which is my wife and my son.
You know, Michael, one of the things you said that's so interesting, you know, we both grew up in small times with small ideas. And even when I made my first $1 million 9 months out of law school, that was unfathomable to most of my family. I still, although I had the success, I still believed I was that small town kid with small dreams and that this must not be real. And so I self-sabotaged it and have worked through that. You have tasted some championships, but the ultimate goal of being number one in the world is right within reach. You almost had it. You're still fighting for it. Have you thought about what you're going to do when you win it? You know, I wish I would have thought, like, what am I going to do when I'm where I want to be? Because I remember sitting in my big house with my beautiful wife and everything I dreamed of and going, oh, shit, because I didn't know what to do anymore. Yeah. I lost my purpose. Have you thought about what you're going to do when you win?
I honestly want to grab that UFC belt. I'm going to bring it back here and I'm going to put it on the shelf and I want to get right back to work. People can't fathom that I just won a world title and made a bunch of money and now I'm the number one guy. But man, right back on Monday, he's back to work, because that's what everybody wants to see. They don't want to hear you talk about the hard work. They want to see the hard work.
I will tell you this, that hope and prayer is a wonderful place to start. But what I love about your story is, you know, that hope and prayer will also be where you finish. You really are, to me, an icon, someone that is a milestone for so many young people, men and women, of what we can do with hope and prayer and faith in ourselves. That inner me cannot be your enemy. And thank you so much for being my friend, not just spiritually, but physically, my friend. I appreciate it. I know you're here to protect me against that guy over there. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Dave, man. I appreciate the opportunity, man. God bless you guys.